Tuesday the 8th of December, Kof Aleph Kislev, Rabbi Dr. Chaim Avraham Gardner, coughs and sneezes spread diseases.
Good morning. The purpose of this small shiur is not to pasken on the halachas of keeping your germs to yourself, but at least to ma'ara the shailas, the issues involved. Historically, the inspiration for this year came on a walk in the Derbyshire Peak District with my wife, about a long time ago, when we came across a village called Eam in Derbyshire. It's known as the Plague Village. We knew nothing about it before, and the story was that in the time of the Great Plague in London, 1665 or somewhere around there, a travelling tailor caught the plague, which was bubonic plague, in this village, and it spread like wildfire around the village. And there are these old cottages there, and there's a plaque on each of the different cottages: here the first victim of the plague died, and then a week later the next three died, and so on. So, very interesting, when the local priest, the local galach, realized what was happening, he instructed everyone in the village that they must stay in the village and be prepared to die rather than spread the plague to the north of England. Historically, until then, the plague had been limited to the London area. And although they didn't understand exactly how the plague was spread, it's actually a bacterium, but they understood it was contact between people who had had contact with the plague that spread it. So he said no one must leave the village, everyone must be prepared to die, because the desire was everyone wanted to run away as soon as they realized what was happening to other villages. The amazing thing, well, maybe it's an indication of Yeridus Adoris, how they did listen to their religious leader then. No one left the village, and half of the village died of the plague, including the priest's wife, and there's an old cemetery there in this tiny village where 250, 300 people are buried, all from these few weeks dying of the plague. But they didn't escape, they didn't run away, and the plague never spread to the rest of the north of England. So this got me thinking at the time that this incredibly courageous of all of these people who kept this takana of the priest, but was it right or was it not right, the Fi Torah, to risk practical exhibit A here? Should this gentleman have come to the shiur or not? We'll deal with that at the end. So, it was definitely courageous, but was this the right thing? Courage in itself is not necessarily the measure of what is right or wrong. I remember once there was a mother of two who died climbing K2, the second highest mountain in the Himalayas. And at the time, people were full of how courageous this woman was, and to my mind this woman was a criminal, exposing her two young children to the possibility of having to grow up without a mother because of her courage. I certainly wouldn't have the courage to climb one of these mountains in the Himalayas, but on the other hand, that doesn't make it right. So were they right or not? So the first thing is looking at it, trying to sort of analyze it a little bit more halachically. One would say that one has a lafidi, the Torah approach, one would have a balance between mitzad echad, the mitzvah of b'chai b'hem, of b'kuch nefesh, of all cross trying to save life. So every person within that village had a, let's say, at least let's imagine that this was a Jewish village, and therefore these people were going with the halachas of the Torah, that they would have a mitzvah of v'chai b'hem of pikuach nefesh, of saving life. Therefore, each of them would have a mitzvah to run away from the village to avoid dying from the plague. But mitzad sheni, each of them has got a potential issa of lo sirtzach, of murder, of killing anyone who they in turn infect with the plague. Maybe many people. So, on the face of it, the makor to answer this is the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Ayin Daled Amud Aleph. So there, the Gemara in Sanhedrin discusses the Shaila, or tells us of the Gimel Averis, the three cardinal Averis which a person has a din of Yehorev Va'Aliyava, that he has to be prepared to give up his life rather than transgress those Gimel Averis. Generally, the Gemara points out that whatever it is, whether it's being over on Gidol Shabbos or whatever it is, a person has a right and actually a chiyuv to be over on that Issa rather than transgress the Issa, rather than give up their lives. And that's learnt out from the positive v'chai bohem, or the phrase v'chai bohem, the mitzvah should always be something that we should live through rather than the cause of our death. The Gemara there discusses there are three exceptions to it, the third of it being murder, lo sirtzach. In a case where a person was threatened, these things have also often happened in the concentration camp, threatened by an SS guard, either you kick the stool away from under the feet of someone, an innocent person who is on a gallows, or you'll be shot. You have to be prepared to give up your life rather than do that. So the Gemara says, why? So the Gemara there gives a svara. The Gemara says the reason is, it's a matter of Torah logic, really. And the Gemara says there that Miyema de Doma de Doch Sumak Tefe, Dilma Doma de Hai Gavra Sumak Tefe. Who says the blood of this poor person who you're contemplating killing in order to, innocent person in order to save your own life, who says his blood is redder or sweeter in the eyes of Hashem? He's less sweet in the eyes of Hashem than yours. Maybe his is of more value. So Rashi points out, what's the Gemara getting at? Ein kan loyma, says Rashi. Here we can't use a principle, normal principle of v'chai b'hem v'lo sheyomus b'hem, that you must be prepared, that you can always save your life rather than die for the mitzvah. Why? Here's a key point. Shelo hitya kosef ele mishum chavibas nafshom shel Yisrael l'kodesh baruch hu. The only reason why the Torah ever allows us to transgress an avera, doesn't matter what it is it because of chavibas nafshom shel Yisrael l'kodesh baruch hu? Is because we are every neshama is so precious in the eyes of Hashem. Therefore, he was matir us, or the Torah was matir us, to permitted us to transgress an avera to save that life. V'kan yesh ibud nefesh chavera. But here, because there's a swapping of lives rather than a saving of lives, this person would have to kill the other person who's there on the gallows in order to save his own life. Therefore, lo nitzan debah melech litchos. Therefore, the decree of Hashem and the Torah of lo sirtzach, of don't murder, is not pushed aside because of this. In fact, it wouldn't matter what it was. It could be lo signiv, it could be don't steal. A person would normally be allowed to steal to save their life. A partisan in the forest in the war in Poland, starving to death in the winter, no food available, would be motivated to steal from a Polish farmer there. Many of them were anti-Semitic, would have killed them or handed them over to the Gestapo, couldn't go and ask for the food. Motive for him to steal a chicken, steal food there to keep himself going, because it's in order to save his life. But if there would be no net gain, the two Gemara on Nibom Matia, Daf Samach Mei Samad Aleph, two people walking in a desert, only one jug of water between them, and they need only one of them can survive because one jug full of water is needed. needed in order to get to the next watering hole. The Gemara passage there that one person has to drink the lot in order to save that life. But the other person cannot steal the other person's jug of water, even though surely you can steal to save life, but you're not saving life, you're just swapping life, because the other person will now not live because you've taken their water supply. Even though there it could be argued it's not even lost, so it's not murder there at stake, it's only theft at stake. There's no issa that's permitted normally to be done, only to save a life. No, you're not saving life. Maybe our Gemara is saying, maybe here is different because maybe you could claim your life is worth more than the other person. I'm a rabbi and a doctor, so my life must be very, very valuable, says the Gemara, and the gardener, says the Gemara. Says the Gemara, no. In the eyes of Hashem, Miyema, who can know whose life is worth more than another, and therefore it's always just looked at as exchanging one life for another rather than overall saving life or saving a better life. One can never look at it like that. So here in our situation, each person from this village wishes to try to save their life, but in turn each of them will potentially be killing another by spreading the infection in order to save it. Even if one says here, it's not a certainty, because it's not a certainty that they're going to kill someone. They might avoid infecting them, although very difficult in those days without quarantine situations. Otherwise, of course, that would have been the straightforward thing to do. Obviously, they had no means of doing that in those days. So let's say at least it's a sophic of Lotzir Tzucha. There's a definite possibility, if not a certainty, they're going to transgress the Avera. On the other hand, it's not a certainty that they're going to die within the village. Only half of the people died in the village, not everyone died in the village. Therefore, it's only a sophic v'chai b'hem, a sophic of the mitzvah pekuach nefesh as well. If you like, the concentrating guard says, play Russian roulette with this other poor Jew in the camp, or I'll play Russian roulette with you and spin the chamber of the gun and fire it. And there, again, the same principle applies, that there is a sophic issa, and we're not allowed to transgress a sophic issa. According to some, that's an issa deraisa. Any sophic issa deraisa is an issa deraisa itself. So therefore, we cannot possibly kill another person to possibly save ourselves. We, again, have no right to transgress any prohibition, even a sophic prohibition, unless it's to save life. And here, we're just exchanging one life for another. So, on the face of it, the priest was absolutely right. The problem is that the Ramah didn't agree with the priest. So the Ramah paskins in Yeridaya, Chuf Tez Zayin, Sivhei, very simply, Chayev Livroch Ma'ish Yesh Bo Deva. Exactly this case of Deva is plague, that a person is obliged to run away to escape from a town they're living in which has plague. So you see clearly that you can. The question now is why? How can you do that? So maybe we could say, because this is all just grammar, it's all indirect, that you're not directly killing a person by infecting them. After all, what happens, so let's say I breathe over this person, they breathe in the bacteria multiply within them, and eventually the person dies. It's not a direct process. I'm releasing the bacteria upon this person. The bacteria are eventually multiplying, killing the person. That's only grammar, it's indirect. I'm not taking a knife and stabbing the person to death. And even if they didn't understand the exact process of transmission of infection at the time of Ramon, no one had identified yet a bacterium. But nevertheless, they understood, however it was done with bad air or what it was that they understood, but it was an indirect process, so maybe Grom is different. That's not the case. We see that the Rambam paskins this halacha, Yerushalmi, the case of a city that's surrounded by hostile goyim, and they say, throw out one of your people or we'll kill the lot of you. One's not allowed to do that. Why? Because you're not allowed, again, the same principle actually applies, of Miyema, who says that the poor guy you're going to choose to throw out is any worse than any of the other guys that you might choose within the village, so you can't throw them out. Why can't you throw them out? It's only indirect. I'm only delivering this guy into the hands of the hostile enemy, who we know are going to kill the person, that's definite. But we townsfolk are not going to, we just want to save our lives. So what do? We deliver them outside the city gates, and they'll kill them. It's definitely grom, it's just that we're not directly killing. And yet, one has to give up, the whole town has to be prepared to give up their life, rather than do it. So we see that grom raticha is asa. And in fact, that once he's also cleaved there, one has to be prepared to give up one's life. There's a dinner of Yehoram al Yabba. The only difference is one wouldn't be able to be mechayv someone misa, the tifet. At time of Sanhedrin, that person wouldn't have got the death penalty for doing it, but in all other respects, it's for sikha. One has to give up one's life. Sorry?
It's greater
than the whole. So that's a different cheshbon, and there the Kesem Mishri says, Rashi explains somewhere that although it's true that the whole town is going to die, the problem is when you pick out one person, any one person you pick, there's a difference that someone could volunteer. But any one person you pick out, he can, if they've asked for one person, you can say, when you pick Reuven, Reuven can say, well, why pick me? Pick Shimon. So it's still one for one, like one life. So, yes?
When you're having the one with the Baal of Bechira, there's a big difference when one person goes back here is the other Shem, and you're handing over to people who are Baal of Bechira who can give money. That's Chet and Yosef and the pit with the Chushim.
Yes, yeah, no, I understand that, but the principle is still that we're only dealing with grammar. I'm not talking about degree of fault or degree of... So the on the face of it, the answer is this: that our case, the case of the Ramah, is mutter, is permitted for the person to run away, because we're actually not dealing here with a sofek issa of raticha of murder, but a sveksveker, a double doubt, a sveksveker. Why are we dealing with a double doubt? Because first of all, we don't know if the person who wants to run away to escape the plague is actually infected. Is he incubating the plague? Has he already been infected with a bacterium? If he has already, there's no point in running away, because without antibiotics at the time that the Ramah was paskening, it was 100% mortality. Once a person had it, they died. There was no way out. But it was not 100% infectivity. It wasn't certain that they would catch the plague. You see, only half the village died. So, it's a sveksveker. Sofek has the person who's trying to escape and save himself got the plague. Vafilitim Saloma, even if he has got the plague, maybe the people who he comes into contact with are not going to become infected. If they do, they'll definitely die. But they're not definitely going to. He's not going to deliberately breathe over as many people as he could. That would be different. We're not suggesting, Ramon's not talking about that sort of person. And so therefore we're dealing with one sofek of mitzvah pekuch nefesh v'chai bahem, and mitzvah sheni a sveksveker on the is of lo sivtzvah. So therefore, since we're dealing with sveksveker, however we'll understand why it is that sveksveker double doubt, the issa, the prohibition is no longer forbidden, whether it's just to say the Torah didn't go so far, even though the Torah forbade, or according to some it was Chazal, forbade an sofek issa, but the Torah doesn't go so far to forbid a double doubt, although it's because of the principle of rov. But whatever the reason is, hey, once it's a double doubt, once it's a sveksveker, it's mutter. So on the face of it, that's pshat in the Ramah, and that on the face. faith, but therefore the priest was courageous but wrong to maybe condemn many of the village to death. But let's move on to a perhaps something that hopefully that's not this sort of shine is not too much halacha lemaisa, but something maybe is a little more practical for us. What happens if someone has a serious non-life-threatening infectious disease? So obviously the most current one would be swine flu. Could be head lice in the school, in a school community. It could be measles. So if a person has, first of all, let's take a case of a person who actually has swine flu. Can he go to work? He's got important meetings. He's needed at work. Can he go to the office? Can he go to work? Can he go to shul? Can a child go to school? Got very important exams. So if the child has, then there's no question they can't. Because they'll be, even though they're not going to be over the issa of Leisiritzach, but they'll be over the prohibition of Chevel Bechabera, of harming the fellow man, which is an issa Torah. And even if you say again it's indirect, it's only groma, it's the virus or bacteria, whatever, depending what disease it is, or the lice that are actually going to do the damage, but just like with gram ratzicha is still asa, gram hezek, gram nizokin is still asa. It may be potter, a person who indirectly potter from tashlumin, from monetary compensation, is definitely asa. It's definitely a Torah to cause indirectly damage, harm to another person. So what you might say though is it's definitely asa. Correct. Well, what about siblings? What about or other members of the family? What about a person's wife or children have got swine flu? They haven't, but they may well be incubating it. Can they go to shul, to work, or children go to school, and possibly spread it, or measles, or mumps, whatever it is, maybe a non-life-threatening, but a very unpleasant illness. Can they go? It's on the face of it, quite right. It's a specs faker. Sovic, maybe the person hasn't got the infection, they're not incubating it, and being tipped whatever they are, maybe they're not going to actually pass it on. Problem is, there's a shaila of Reb Chaim Pelagi, one of the Sephardi Poskim of old, who was asked a shaila about a doctor who was treating plague victims. And he, admittedly this is a life-threatening illness obviously, we'll see, still relevant here. He was asked the shaila by the particular kehillah that this doctor davened in. And he wanted to come to shul. And during this plague epidemic. And the members of the kehillah wanted to stop him come to shul because they felt he will pass it on to us, even though the guy was fine at the moment. So Rahman Palaji Paskan, it's also for him to go to shul, and the tzibba have a right to forcibly stop him coming in if he won't listen to this psak. So why, on the face of it, it's a svek svaker. But Rahman Palaji says the reason it's also is because lo samdal dam re'echa. That there is an issa Torah, literally don't stand by your brother's blood. In other words, that you've got an issa to stand by and allow harm, whether death or any harm, even monetary damage, to come to your fellow man when you could stop it. But it's a specs faker. Seems to be, from Rukhan Balaji, we see that the Issa of Losam Darecho means that if you've got any possibility whatsoever of some harm coming to your chava, and you could stop it, and you don't. You're over the isim lo samad. Lo samad demreiachah is telling you that you've got a chiyuv to worry about any possibility that's in your hands to stop of harm coming to another person. That you've got to stop it. The nature of the whole isa is, as long as there's a possibility, and you could stop it, if you can't, nothing you can do, and you could stop it, even that slight possibility, you've got a chiyuv to do so. So, the main nature of the isa is to worry about whatever possibility, and therefore Svek Sveka doesn't come into the chesh. That being the case, coming back to our case of someone wanting to go to work, where the child sent a sibling to school where another child in the family has got measles, mumps, got swine flu, or you go to work, your wife's got swine flu, it would seem that it would be awesome. Even though it's a spec faker, you've got this in low samadar, worry, you're in a position to stop a possible harm coming, because you don't have to go to work, you don't have to go to school. So on the face of it, it would seem, it would be awesome. How far does this go? Because we joked before about the gentleman over here sneezing. Does he have a right to come to the shir? Maybe he shouldn't. Now, maybe this is someone who actually maybe hasn't got a. Maybe he's just allergic to me. Hasn't got a cold. But even if he has got a cold, now there you might say it's even worse. It's not just a svek svek. It's one sophic. He has got a cold. Does he have a right to come here and possibly part it on?
Good point.
So, on the face of it, the answer here is there's something called, what we would call Haskomas Kol B'nei Odom. That it's like there's an undertaking. To boil it down to its brass tacks, let's imagine I have a meeting this morning with a potential major business deal worth to me and the person I'm meeting worth millions of pounds. But I've got a cold. So I call the guy up and I say, I'm sorry, I can't come. I've got a cold. Does this guy have to back off and both of us lose millions of pounds? No, because the guy is entitled to say, I don't mind you potentially damaging me, it's worth it to me for all the millions of pounds I would gain. So it's worth running the risk of the potential damage of catching a cold from you, so I'm prepared to meet with you. In other words, we can be mochel, or we can agree, we can accept a risk, or even a definite harm, if it's worth it to us. By that token, therefore, it is permissible for this gentleman to come to davening or come to a shir with a cold, because all of us know that life would, through the winter months at least, would grind to a halt. We'd never get a minion. Our offices wouldn't be able to function. Everything would break down, because if everyone might give a cold, a cough to someone else, a minor illness to someone else, or sore throat, whatever it is, none of us are going to be able to go to shul, to send our kids to school, or life breaks down. So it's like everyone in society has given their agreement for you, when you've got a cold, to meet with me, or come to my office, or come to shul, or go to school, or whatever it is. And it's like there's a scholar's call for the autumn. It's like everyone has agreed. We don't have to send a note round all parents at the school, because we know that's what everyone said. We know that's the case. We don't have to answer, because it's obvious, it's an understanding. We know that that is the case. It's as if they've told us. Obviously, that would be different if it's a question of visiting someone who was immunosuppressed. Their immune system was damped down because of drugs they were taking. Some are visiting an old age home where people are very vulnerable. So to visit an old age home with a bad cold would be wrong, because you cannot presume, and it would be quite wrong to presume that everyone there is prepared to catch a cold. or to visit a ward where there are leukemia patients on immunosuppressive drugs and assume you can go and visit there with a cold would be completely wrong. Coming back then to our case of the, not the someone who's definitely got a cold, but someone who may be a contact with someone who's got Christ-flu, or someone in his weighing up. How bad is the potential risk? And in a normal flu epidemic, again, society would grind to halt completely, presumably, if anyone who was a contact would not be allowed to go to school, to shul, to work, etc. Maybe in a situation where the illness, even if not life-threatening, but is that everyone's very interested in being contained and not spreading. Let's say at the start of the swine flu scare, first of all, people thought maybe it was going to be much more severe than at least Blenhorrit seems to be. And secondly, when it first started in people who'd been in Mexico, maybe it was felt it could actually be contained and it wouldn't become a pandemic. Maybe in that situation one would not be allowed to presume that, because generally society would want to try and contain it and avoid the spread altogether. So each case would need weighing up carefully, and often it's a question of a person realizing their own negias and almost impossible for them to be objective in cases that are in the balance as to how bad is this and would people want. And certainly if someone here had mumps, no one would appreciate the fact that someone else came if they had mumps themselves or some other significant. So each one needs weighing up with a seichel yosha, and in the end probably necessary, because we're all nageim, we all want to go to shul, and all kids don't want to go to school, and all parents want to send their kids to school. So we probably all have to weigh up very carefully, and probably need the guidance of a posik in order to help, just because we're all far too nageim in these matters. Thank you very much.